You know, 33 years ago, last week, a friend of mine was assassinated. His name was Coz Fiji. You have heard me talk about him. Coz was my closest classmate, and I went to theological studies late, but he happened to be 3 years older than me. Assassinated in 1981. He was my closest friend in theological training. When my wife and I were married, the first guests we had in our home were Coz and Colleen. I wrote to his daughter Martina 2 weeks ago. I said, I just want to get the story straight. Please let me understand. Because Martina was only 2 years old when her father was murdered at point blank range in Thailand as a missionary. Short while before that, I was going through Thailand and Coz came to receive me at the airport. I didn't have enough money to buy a room for him. The ministry had rented one room for me. I just asked for two twin beds. And Coz and I lay all night in bed, and he was chatting. He's a tall guy in his bed, his hands behind his back. And I was leaving next day for Phnom Penh. It's 1974. He hugged me, prayed with me, told me he loved me. But he said, you know, I don't think I'm going to survive long. He said, my life is constantly threatened. In 1981, when I got the in memoriam thing from Overseas Missionary Fellowship, my heart sank. Do you know who he was? He was a plumber before he went into theological training. He went into plumbing after having started a bakery business, and the business with his friend went bankrupt, and he said, I'm going to pay back every penny. I want to go in ministry, but I'm not going to go into ministry in debt to no one except to God. I'm debtor to him. I'm going to pay my debts to mankind. The judge even dismissed him and said, you've paid back enough. He said, no, I'm going to pay back everything I borrowed. And so he worked for 2 to 3 years as a plumber, earning enough money to pay back everything that he had borrowed, and then came to theological training, and then we had him as a guest, and he went on. He's in the middle of a prayer meeting, walks out of the prayer. There are no lights in that village. And he's going through that prayer meeting, comes out, he's chatting with the Thai people whom he loved. A man walks in at point blank range, filled him full of bullets, and he collapsed and he was gone. And his brother Bill Fiji in another town was phoned, and Bill said, a dreaded telephone call came and said, your brother's been murdered, come and pick up his body. It was in 06 that I met Martina for the first time after that. So you see, she was at this point 27, expecting her child. RZIM paid her way to go and see the spot where her father was slain. She had not gone there. She talked about it. And I said, I'd like to get you there, Martina. She said she wanted to talk to me because I was her dad's closest friend, and she'd always wanted to hear stories about her father. She's a missionary in Russia now. Her brother Michael is a missionary in Peru. She told me I had the story a little off the first time I told it, so I made sure I could correct it. I said, did you sit next to the lady? I said, I seem to recall hearing that when we sent you to Thailand, you happened to sit next to a lady whose husband had paid the assassin to finish off Coz. Is that right? She said, yeah, I did meet her, but I didn't happen to be sitting next to her. She just came up and talked to me. My father had sat next to her the night that he was murdered. She was the last person to really chat with him. He walked out and his face full of bullets. Force is always a reality. You can have the scorn, you can have the force, and thirdly and very importantly, often happens, you can have scheming from within the ranks. Scheming from within the ranks. What do I mean by that? From within the ranks, you can oftentimes have those who will betray you, those who will let you down, those who will hurt you, stab you in the back. Jason Elam, who used to be the place kicker first for the Colorado Rockies, then played for Atlanta Falcons, one of our great friends and supporters of the ministry. I remember Jason Elam telling me, you know, he said, I expect to be booed on the soil that I'm playing with the opponent. It hurts very much when you're booed on your home turf. And you can often get stabbed in the back from within the ranks. Nabil was not kidding when he said some of the nastiest letters you can get from somebody within the ranks. Naomi will tell you, my family will tell you, when I some incident that had taken place in which somebody didn't think I did what I was supposed to do. And Christian talk shows, this one particular anchor just railed after me, went after me, went after me, went after me, till my daughter said, "Dad, aren't you going to say anything?" I said, "No, I don't even listen to it. Just ignore it." But it bothered them, it stood them, till she wrote a real letter and said, "Look, leave my dad alone. What he's doing for the same cause that supposedly you're talking about. Leave him alone. Division." Here's a statement I want to read to you. "It seems an awful thing to say, yet it is true that there are betrayers like Shemaiah and Noadiah in most Christian congregations today. Men and women who have professed conversion to Christ, who share in the fellowship and labors of the saints, who nevertheless seem to find cruel pleasure in the fall of a Christian leader. To his face, they are friendly, fussy, saintly. But behind his back, they are mischief makers. They profess loyalty and concern. Yet if he slips or falls, they love to gossip it among the brethren or talk about it around town. Oh, what hot bang such disloyal brethren give to Christian ministries, pastors, superintendents, and leaders. They are Tobias Quisling's, Satan's fifth columnists." Pretty powerful words. We need each other. We need you to stand with us. We need to stand together as believers, rather than stabbing each other in the back or taking on a competitive edge. The world out there is hostile. Can we come together and major on issues that are truly major and not on the minor ones? Nehemiah faced all these things, from scorn, from force, to scheming. What did he do? Quickly, he made three responses. Number one, he said they were to look to God. Keep looking towards God. Always realize what it is that has called you into this and who it is that called you into this. That's why I believe staying in the Word is so important. One of my favorite biographies is To the Golden Shore, the biography of Adoniram Judson, the one who was such a rank skeptic, Providence College, now Brown University. They say he was so brilliant that in every competition, he was right at the top. No one else was anywhere to be seen. His father was a minister. He would sit and listen to his dad and actually mock his dad's belief. And then in a dramatic turn of events, his closest friend, a skeptic, had a horrendous death. They were staying at the same inn. Judson didn't know who the man was in the next room, moaning and groaning in pain. And in the morning when he checked out, he says to the manager, "Who's that guy who kept us up?" And the crying subsided. He said, "Oh, he's a brilliant student from Brown out here, from Providence College. And he was dying of some terrible thing. And we couldn't put him out, but he died towards the early hours of the morning." He said, "Oh, I go to the same university. What's his name?" He said, "His name was Jacob Ames." So what did he say? His name was Jacob Ames. He was Judson's roommate. Judson started to ride back. In his biography, he said, "As the hooves of my horse were pounding into the ground, what was pounding into my heart was how lost we are as human beings and don't know it." He surrendered his life to Christ. If you haven't read Judson's biography, read it. He buried his wife, buried his children, translated the Bible into Burmese 7 years before his first convert. 7 years. 20 years before he had 100 people in a congregation. He left from the United States as the first missionary to leave, went to Calcutta, baptized by William Carey. There's a mark in Carey's church where Judson was baptized. And then he went on to Burma, now called Myanmar. Today, the Burmese people, as the church is beginning to grow, read the Bible that Adoniram Judson translated for them into their language. He died at sea, never made it back to his birthplace in Malden, Massachusetts. Rigorous intellectual, brilliant intellectual, who buried so many kids and buried his wife, but he realized what the issue really was. "From love that asks that I may be sheltered, from winds that beat on thee, from failing when I should aspire, from faltering when I should climb higher, from silk and self, O captain free, thy servant who would follow thee, from subtle love of softening things, like easy choices, weakenings, not thus our spirits fortified, not this way went the crucified, from all that dims thy Calvary, O Lamb of God, deliver me. Give me the love that leads the way, the faith that nothing can dismay, the hope no disappointments tire, the passion that will burn like fire. Let me not sing to be a clod, make me thy fuel, flame of God. Amy Carmichael, I challenge you today, look to God. Secondly, and very importantly, reflect on the issues. What is at stake if you and I quit the fight? What is at stake? Your homes, your children, your grandchildren, our families are at stake. That's exactly what Nehemiah said. It's your families for which you're really fighting. You know, as I saw my two girls up front here speaking today, I just said, Lord, I don't deserve this blessing because I've not been the dad I would like to have been. I've been gone so much. But to see all of my three kids here with their spouses and, you know, settled in ministry and watching them talk about the needy, watching them talk about strategic planning. And by the way, one of the video you just saw before we came here was done by my son Nathan. He works in the videography and the radio department out there. Somebody asked me, you've got all of your kids in the ministry? He said, yeah, how come? I said, because I don't have any more or they would be in there too. For years and years of being gone, and now God in his mercy allows me the privilege of them working under the same roof. I can't honestly tell you if I know where their office is in the building, but I can tell you they're there. And I just thank God. And so a lunch now, a breakfast now, a dinner now. I'm doing this for our families. For your families. Nehemiah had every family stand in front, guard, and keeping watch. Please let us remember our children. You know, I think I may have it here. Lee Iacocca, in his book Straight Talk, made an incredible comment, and I think I should be able to pull it up for you. I'd not planned on quoting it, but he made this statement that I think was so powerful in an interview. He says this to an interviewer, you know, as I start down the twilight years of my life, I try and look back and figure out what it was all about. I'm still not sure what is meant by good fortune and success. I know fame and power are really for the birds. But then life suddenly comes into focus and there stand my kids. And I love them. No matter what you've done for yourself or humanity, if you haven't given love and attention to your family, I ask you, what have you really accomplished? You know, I wish this were a simple thing. I know some hurt when the children are off the mark. We went through that for a short period of time with one of ours. And I know how deep the pain is. Don't stop living with guilt. Don't start hammering yourself. Don't start pounding your head against a wall on it. When the Bible says to train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Actually, the Hebrew says, and it will not depart from him. Keep the truth. Keep the truth. Keep the truth going. It will never depart. They'll never be able to outrun what it is you've really poured into their lives. And sooner or later, the strong arm of truth turns these lives around. Do it. Reflect on the issues. I do it for my love for Christ. I do it for my love for my family. I do it for the love of my nation. This is now home for me. I treat North America as my home. I've been here now 40 years. Yeah, India is always on my heart. I'm an Indian in my blood, and that's why I keep going back, keep going back. There are these three nations for which I long. It's part of my DNA. When I look at what's happened to America in the last handful of years, I say, God help us. God help us. Whatever has happened, keep guard. And I bring you to the final point, as he says, you know, look to God, reflect on the issues, and lastly, be armed in readiness. How do we get armed in readiness? I want you to seriously understand this. I'll be just 4 or 5 minutes and I'll be done. No, this is not a self-propagating ministry, but the ministry exists because of the truth I'm going to give to you. If we don't prepare our young people how to battle out these intellectual issues, we are actually tossing them to the wolves. If you don't prepare your sons and daughters on how to deal with this issue, we're throwing them into the internet. And I just am so fearful that all of our sincerity and all of our genuineness if we are so naive that we think they'll be okay without helping them up here, we're really flirting with weapons of warfare that they're going to face, over which they're going to say, you know, I don't get it. I don't know how to answer these questions. There was a man who stood up in the Philippines at our Asia conference, and he said for years and years he was part of a discipleship group. And he said almost everyone that he discipled along the way, 5-10 years down the line, they were gone from the faith. He said there's no simple answer, but I'll tell you where I failed. I failed to equip them out here. We need both. We need the mentoring. We need the biblical stuff. We need the teaching. We need all of that. But we also need this. Ultimately, they'll be defending it from here. But when people throw rocks at them, they have to be able to come up with that, which they can respond from the mind and say, I have thought this thing through. I've seen people's lives changed. I've seen people's lives transformed. And as I bring this message to a close, I just want to say to you that if you look to God, you reflect on the issues and be armed in readiness. How do we get armed in readiness? You always arm the inner life first, your thought life, the habits of your heart, your eyes, training the eyes, training the thoughts, what you're getting comfortable with. You always strengthen the inner life first. That's where your strength will have to come from. Then the second thing is, how do you prepare yourself to reach those who are genuinely seeking answers and find they are not getting them? By the time the sun would set on December 31, if the Lord spares my life, I'd have been on the road over 200 days, and it's been tough. But you know what? God's helped me every step of the way. I've had some strange emotional responses as I've been preaching this year, where halfway through a message, it's almost like a voice that'll come up within me and say, keep preaching, I am with you. I'm sure the team will tell you that. Halfway through a message, they'll say, I'm with you, I'm with you, I'm with you. I could never do this if he weren't with me. Tough, tough settings. But UPenn, when they raised this big stink about my coming there, I knew who the guy was who wrote what he did, because I used one of his quotes and I watched my audience and I watched somebody jab him in the ribs. And he looked and I said, you know, one of you said in one of your articles that our philosophical approach, my philosophical approach is anecdotal rather than argument, meaning stories. I said, do you know what you just did in that comment? Are you aware, since you said you're a philosophy student, that this argument is anecdotal, not argumentative? Do you know in that one statement, you wiped out all of Sunni Islam? It's all anecdotal. The Hadith, it's all tradition, stories. You wiped out the Gita, the most sacred text of the Hindus. It's entirely a story. You wiped out the Mahabharata, the sacred text. I said, do you realize how prejudiced your argument was? And let me tell you something else, I said. If I were to talk to you about why people don't believe in God, you know what they'll say? Oh, you know, I had a friend who died so miserably. Is that, what's that, anecdotal or argument? Anecdotes and argument mutually feed each other. Margaret Thatcher, speaking to the Scottish General Assembly years ago, made this profound statement. The truths of the Judeo-Christian tradition are infinitely precious. Not only as I believe because they are true, but also because they provide the moral impulse which alone can lead to that peace for which we all long. Do you know what she just said? The truths of the Judeo-Christian tradition are infinitely precious, not only as I believe because they are true, but also because they provide the moral impulse which alone can lead to that peace for which we all long. There is little hope for democracy if the hearts of men and women in democratic societies cannot be touched by a call to something greater than themselves. Political structures, state institutions, collective ideals are not enough. We parliamentarians can legislate for the rule of law. You, the church, can teach the life of faith. She said, we can legislate all we want. You, as Christians in the church, will have to teach the life of faith. That's you and me. Let's take this into the dark world and know the truths are precious. And whether we are scorned, or whether force comes our way, or whether we are faces of scheming, just look to Him. Let's reflect on the issues, and let's be armed in readiness. We do this for the glory of God and for the well-being of our families and our offspring. I am committed to that right into the next generation and generation after.
You've been watching Let My People Think with Dr. Ravi Zacharias. We're grateful for your prayers and financial support. If you'd like to know more about this ministry or would like to donate to our efforts, you can call us at 1-800-448-6766 or visit us online at www.rzim.org. You can also stay connected to RZIM through Twitter and Facebook. Our mailing address is RZIM, Post Office Box 921-939, Norcross, Georgia, 30010.
Is it historically reasonable? Are the Gospels historically reasonable and reliable to a certain degree that we can measure as historians? And I think we would say, yes, they are. And there are reasons for that, for testifying to the resurrection of Jesus. First of all, we don't just have one Gospel, we have four Gospels. Four Gospels that tell us the same thing, that Jesus was raised from the dead. Second of all, we have Paul's letters corroborating this fact that Jesus rose from the dead. In other words, they corroborate one another because many of Paul's letters, most of Paul's letters, in fact, were written before the Gospels. So here's my third point. Here's this Jew who at one point is persecuting the church violently, held the jackets and coats of those who stoned Stephen, as we see in the book of Acts. Yet somehow this Jew becomes a believer in Jesus and a follower of Jesus, so much so that he becomes the chief apostle and the chief witness, chief apologist, as you will, for the Christian faith. Now, how do you explain that historically?
And then you have the discovery of the empty tomb being attributed to women. Now, in the first century, women were not considered credible witnesses in a court of law. If a woman witnessed a crime, she could not go to court and testify because her testimony was not taken seriously. So why would the disciples pick women to be the witnesses to the resurrection unless that's really what happened? They were just reporting what happened. And then you have the disciples of Jesus coming to believe that Jesus rose from the dead, and like I said, preaching that beginning in Jerusalem and then going all the way to their death. Now, people would die for things that they think are true, even though they're mistaken. They would die for that if they really believe that what they're dying for is true. But if they know that it is not true, if they were making it up, they would have known it wasn't true, and then they would not have been prepared to die for it. And they died in separate places, all convinced that Jesus had appeared to them alive after the crucifixion.
We often find that a media objection comes up against an anti-supernaturalism. The person is arguing from philosophical naturalism or materialism, in which their world, there is no possible intervention in their system. So basically, they believe in a universe of cause and effect within a closed system. And the idea, therefore, is that as Christians or religious people, we are somehow invoking a world of fantasy and unbelief. But we believe in a universe of cause and effect in an open system, that there's an agency that can act. So I think what we've got to define, and I know in my own case when I've had this discussion with people talking about miracles and so forth, or the possibility, is that if God exists, by definition, miracles would be logically possible. I mean, if he's a greater being than by which anything else exists, he is the greatest of all, is he omniscient, all-powerful, and so forth, then the very name God carries the attributes of the ability to do anything within his system.
And generally speaking, those scholars who presuppose that no God exists will throw up their hands and they will say, we don't know what happened. And I would venture to argue, if your presupposition is that God doesn't exist and that leads you to a dead end, perhaps we can start exploring other presuppositions. Maybe God does exist. We have this whole host of evidence that miracles happen. Maybe there's a miracle that happened here. And in fact, that's what everyone testified to at that time. It's the best explanation by far. And if we as scientists presuppose naturalism, we're doing ourselves a disservice, especially if we don't look into the evidence around us.
Folks, as I stand before you, the first quarter of the year is coming to an end. It's hard to believe. Christmas is just seemingly behind us, and now all of a sudden we are looking to the second quarter. This is the way life goes at a higher speed in the itinerant work, beginning with the Passion Conference, going through meetings at the prayer breakfast in Virginia, and on then to the Philippines and other special efforts in so many other cities, Pepperdine University and so on. We just know how important it is that we stay on track. But we cannot stay on track without your prayerful support. Please stand with us in prayer that God will protect us, bless us, anoint us. And then in your giving, please come alongside. Ask God what He will have you to do. This ministry is growing so drastically and so dramatically, but so pointedly, and we need you to stand with us too and be enablers for us. Please ask the Lord what He would have you to do to stand with our ZIM at this time. We'll be grateful, and on behalf of our entire worldwide team, this is Ravi Zacharias saying thank you so much.